This is WordPress Weekly, your source for the latest news, plugins, and interviews with influential leaders in the WordPress community. Here's your hosts, Jeff Chandler and Marcus Couch.
Welcome to episode 216 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, December 9th, 2015. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by Marcus Couch. Marcus, man, what's up?
How you doing? Boy, a lot of news coming around, big stuff to discuss, and boy, we got a crowd here on hand. Got a whole peanut gallery to be talking about WordCamp US in this episode.
Absolutely we do, but before we get on to our roundtable, we got to tell everyone that, in fact, WordPress 4.4 named Clifford, not after the big red dog, but actually after a famous jazz trumpeter. Actually, his name is Clifford Brown, was released yesterday. And Marcus, I know you've had a chance to play around with, I think it was RC1.
Yes.
I think it was the latest release. And I will go over the different features here. But the first is, of course, responsive images, which so when people upload an image to WordPress, what WordPress does is it automatically crops it and creates smaller images of that image. And when you're in a post, you can, before 4.4, when you assign an image to a post, it only uses that one size, and it doesn't matter which device you're using, whether it's an iPhone or a tablet, it would see that one image. Well, now WordPress is smart enough to where it will actually look at the various image sizes that are available, and depending on the one that's larger than the screen size you're using, it will use the best image size for the device that the person is using. So that's what they call responsive images. So it uses WordPress 4.4 adds these things called the source set and size support to the software. And apparently what this does, it's going to save on bandwidth, because instead of loading a really high resolution image on all devices, maybe an iPhone can get away with just loading a 1500 pixel sized image at 500 pixels. So it's going to save on bandwidth, and it should automatically speed up a lot of people's websites. And if you're using, in fact, here's a little tidbit, if you're using Photon, which is like a content distribution network that's available in Jetpack for free, that actually supports responsive images in WordPress 4.4. So that's quite a nifty combination if you have those two running together in terms of gaining a little bit more performance and speed out of your site.
Indeed, and I sense a lot of theme updates coming in the next week from different theme developers to be able to take care of this other than their native kind of handling of images, so it's going to be a busy week.
Right, so the next thing is WordPress for a number of years has been able to, it's been an OEmbed consumer, and what OEmbed means is it makes it really easy from trusted providers. Let's say you want to easily embed a YouTube video into a post. Well, if you're using a visual editor, all you have to do is copy the URL of a video, paste it in the visual editor, and boom, magic happens, and there's the embedded video, and it's just as easy as that. Well, in 4.4, now you can embed content from other WordPress sites that are also running WordPress 4.4. So when you link from an article, if you used a full URL in a visual editor, WordPress will automatically turn it into this nice little iframe that shows the article title, shows the source of the article, and there's also a share button with a number of contents, and it also displays an excerpt of the content. Now, some people are they're on the fence as to whether they want to have their content so easily embeddable, but I think what's the difference between this and actually linking to someone's content? They're really, to me, except one is more visual than the other, is not really that much of a difference. However, as part of the development of this feature, there is a plugin out there called Disable Embeds, which will disable people from embedding your content, but it also prevents you from embedding other people's content in case it bothered you. But for people like me, for someone who writes for a living, I can't. The more sites that get on WordPress 4.4, the better, because I'm going to have fun with this OEmbed feature.
Exactly. And, you know, you brought up an interesting point that when you do embed from another WordPress installation, it carries over the excerpt. So those of you that are regular bloggers, you're going to have to stop getting lazy about putting excerpts in your posts and start putting them in so that you can have a vibrant description as to what your content is. There's nothing worse than just letting WordPress pick what your excerpt is even though you may be getting into the introduction of whatever your topic happens to be, it's going to pick up something from the beginning. So word to the wise, start creating excerpts within your posts if you haven't already.
Yeah, that's actually a good point, something I didn't test. Like by default now, it uses the first so many characters of words within the post, and then that's your excerpt. But I wonder if, as you say, I don't know if you've tested this as well, but if you have a custom excerpt, if it will use that instead.
It does, yes.
Okay, good, good. So that's, wow, for a lot of people, that may be the one reason they finally have a reason to use the excerpt box.
And use it wisely.
Yes.
You know, use it as if it were a description in Google. Make it so that it's vibrant, so that it's something that actually has a call to action. You know, read about this story and many more right here at MarcusCouch.com, or if you're going to do something like that. So that's a very valuable thing in terms of the excerpt, being able to control your own citation from a share like that. And like I said, if you're not using excerpts already, please do.
And up next, we have the new default theme for 2016, obviously called 2016. And it's a pretty simple-looking theme where you have post information meta to the left side of the content. It was designed with a mobile-first responsive approach, so it actually looks very good. It scales down to an iPhone, and the content looks just as good as if you were looking at it on a desktop. Comes with about four different color schemes, and you can further customize it using the customizer if you want to do that. And all in all, it's just another nice template to if people are interested in using it. I don't know if it's going to reach the same type of success and usage that 2015 has, which is actually active on more than a million sites. So that's yeah, it is the most popular default theme ever. So that's pretty cool. I wonder why that is. I wonder if there's just a lot of sites out there that just leave it on there, or if people legitimately really like the layout of 2015, which again is it's the left hand sidebar content, the right. It actually doesn't look too bad out of the box.
I don't know. I dispute that it's the most popular ever. I would think that Kubrick would be the most popular.
Well, Kubrick is not even. Not even in the top.
I mean, what I'm saying.
In terms of default themes, though, but you know, it should, at least when it comes to active installs, 2015 right now is at the top with over a million plus.
Yeah, now I had some fun playing around with 2016 for maybe 20 minutes, and it was fun to use the Visual Composer with it. There were a lot of possibilities that you could do within that post content, so it was very interesting. I still haven't seen it on a mobile device yet. I guess that's my next test coming up.
So a couple other changes. There were actually some new things added to WordPress multi-site. There were some bug fixes. There's also a couple of new hooks and filters and actions, all kinds of cool developer stuff. A lot of work actually went into rebuilding the WP Comments component. We've mentioned some of the additions or changes to this component over the past few weeks. Of course, the most noticeable one is that the comment field is at the top instead of the name, email, and URL fields. And that is because, you know, for the most part, if people are going to leave a comment, they want to immediately get to the point of writing whatever it is they want to say, and then they can fill in their information later. So it kind of makes that process a little easier if people want to write their comments first. And it's actually easier to browse now if you're using the keyboard, so it's a bit of an accessibility improvement as well. And there's also been a lot of back-end sort of deep performance improvements with the queries relating to comments, so that's nice. And, of course, the big thing for developers is the taxonomy term meta. And if you get a chance, I hope you want our listeners watch the WordPress 4.4 release video, because when they show off taxonomy term meta, there's a lot of people's eyes that sort of got glossy and white when they saw that you could have, you know, these different color schemes for your different terms and these icons for taxonomy terms. And a lot of people have seen some interest in that. So I think, Marcus, within the next few weeks, I imagine that in your plugin picks of the week segment, you're going to focus or come up with some new plugins that are going to take advantage of these taxonomy term meta in WordPress.
I was thinking the same thing, actually. And what we're talking about is different icons that can go along with your categories. So you can have, you've got business and tech and all of that. You could put a little briefcase for the icon for business, and tech could be, I don't know, whatever, a computer screen. Who knows? But there are a lot of cool things coming around since 4.4 was released. You know, and the final thing, Jeff, I thought Clifford was actually Cliff Burton, the late bassist from Metallica that it was named after, but thanks for correcting me.
Well, I mean, come on. I mean, who's – I saw some tweets the other day where a lot of WordPressers kids were happy because the release of WordPress was named after a big red dog, but little do they know, that's the wrong Clifford.
That's right.
In this day and age, when you say Clifford, that's what we think of. Imagine that. Now, contrary to early reports, the WP title function has not been deprecated. The development team considers it a zombie function, and they still have a recommended way to actually have the document title tag in a theme, so I advise you to look into that if you're interested. And there's a couple of other things as well, mostly tied or specific for developers, but the one thing I want to focus on here is that this version, 4.4, contained over 2,000 commits, and a commit is a patch that's merged into WordPress. So it could be it's a fix, so it could be as small as a typo, or it could be as large as taxonomy term meta. But Scott Taylor and the bug gardeners and the team went through track, and they went through a lot of tickets that were years old and may have had patches, but they were forgotten about, and managed to test them and get a lot of those committed to core, fixing specific issues throughout the code base. And because of that, this release has the most contributors ever. There's 466 of them, so that's just amazing. I mean, that's a hell of a lot of people. And so thank you if anyone's listening out there that contributed a patch to WordPress and was mentioned in 4.4. Thank you very much. And Marcus, man, it's going to be hard to top 466. That's pretty epic, in my opinion.
It is, and it's interesting that they've already announced 4.5, 4.6, and 4.7 leads, and Matt himself is actually going to be the lead on 4.7.
And not to jump too far ahead, but we will talk about that and some of the implications of that, and I'll even give you my theory as to why that is, why he wants to lead that specific version, which I think is rather interesting. So with that, Marcus, you know, a big event happened last week. I don't know if you noticed. WordCamp US,
I saw a little bit of it, yes.
So what I figured we would do here on the show is you and I, we watched it via live stream, so you and I had the live stream perspective. But I brought on four guests here on tonight to do a little roundtable. They were actually there in person. So I'd like to get their perspective, what their experience was like, maybe some of their favorite sessions, and we're just going to lay back and have a chat about the first ever WordCamp US in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So, Marcus, why don't you go ahead and just quickly introduce our guests.
Absolutely. Well, first up, we've got Kiko Duran. He is the co-founder of Prestige Conference. Hello.
Hello.
Nick Vamil, founder of Tech Volts.
Hello.
And we have Michelle Butcher, who is the chief skillet wrangler.
Hi, sure everyone.
There we go.
And Chris Wiegman, senior web engineer at 10Up.
Howdy.
Awesome. Thank you all for coming on the show tonight, spending some time with me and our listeners to tell us a little bit about WordCamp US. And I'll start things off with Michelle. You have an opportunity here. I know that you've been sort of a community evangelist for InMotion Hosting, sort of representing WordCamps on their behalf. So you've had an opportunity to go to many WordCamps, even some in your local area like St. Louis. Your thoughts on just immediately when you were there and 2,000 people, just how do you compare it to some of the other camps you've been to?
It's definitely not like any other camp that's went on this year that I've been to. There's so many people that you leave the last night and go through in your head of how many people you actually didn't even get to say hi to that you only was able to see across the room. But there's so many more new connections being made and just such a great time. And even though there was that many people, it was such an awesome atmosphere.
Awesome. And Kiko, I know, you know, as we said, we've had you on before. You've done an organized prestige conference. From an organizer's point of view of a conference, just your take on what you saw in terms of organization, how the event was run, how they maybe handled hiccups, if any of that from your perspective.
I thought that the organization of it was spot on, but I wasn't really I was not surprised by that at all. The guys in Philly, I've been going to that WordCamp for years, and that has always been, to me, the camp that I thought did it the best all around. So I think it's a great place to have WordCamp US. I even said this week that I think that it should just stay there, because I think to try to follow this crew up, I think that it really is going to be tough for people to be able to. It was such a pedestrian environment where they picked the perfect spot. There were hotels right there. You could just walk across the street to this Reading market that had, like, 100 different places you could eat in there that were all fantastic. It was really a pretty phenomenally run event because they had a budget. They used to do it without a budget and it was still awesome, but with a little bit of a budget, they really put on a great event.
Yeah, and speaking of a budget, based on when Matt was doing his State of the Word and he did the presentation, he thanked all the major sponsors. The top tier sponsors, if I remember correctly, the top five sponsors between them added up to about $275,000. Now, I don't know.
It was four, actually. It was four.
400?
No, it was four sponsors for $275,000.
Okay, four. I thought it was five, but it was four sponsors for $275,000. And I don't. It would be interesting to see if they come out in terms of transparency, the budget report, to see where all that money, how that transpired into the event. But man, it's got to be, if all that money was just specific for WordCamp US, it's got to be the most expensive WordCamp possibly in the world.
Well, I mean, if you saw the size of the conference center that they were in, I mean, it had to be super expensive. I looked at, like, I know, like, last year WordCamp New York was, I don't want to say a total number, it was like somewhere in like the $150,000, $160,000 range, I believe. And this one, I mean, I thought I heard numbers of $500,000, and that wouldn't be that surprising to me, but it was worth it. They did a great job. Everybody, and I didn't hear anybody complain about anything, really. It was just really a well-done event all the way around.
And one of the things that when we found out that WordCamp US is going to be held in Philadelphia, especially at the time of year, early December, everyone started thinking, you know, there's no way. There's going to be a nor'easter. There's going to be a lot of snow. It's going to be cold. But Chris, you living down in Florida now where cold is 70 degrees, you know, from what I saw, there was beautiful weather that whole weekend for the most part in Philadelphia. What did you think? Was weather a concern?
They lucked out. I actually skipped contributor day. I probably shouldn't say that out loud. I'm a history buff. I mean, when I quit flying, I debated going to get a degree in history or archaeology until my wife told me I couldn't have a second dead career. So I love the history stuff, but it was so nice. I mean, it was just nice to walk around. It was gorgeous. I'd love to say I could give the organizers props for that. I hope they luck out again next year. But no, it really did help a lot for the weekend, especially, you know, walking back to the hotel. There's a lot of walking. I think everybody did a lot of walking, and that really helped, I think, especially kind of ferment the – if it had been miserable this week, I don't think people would have been quite as happy at the end.
Yeah, I saw quite a few people who tracked their steps, and they broke records for having like 10, 12, 14,000 steps within that couple-day time span. I mean, that's a lot of walking.
Oh, yeah. It was. I did a Fitbit challenge. I tried to pick 10 people that were there for the weekend. They have Fitbit does a weekend challenge, and I think I came in third, and I did a lot of walking. So I know the people who I was with, yeah, they really nailed it. But that's a good thing, though. I mean, the weather really allowed for that to happen. Had that weather been bad, you know, there wasn't good coffee in the venue. I'm not a coffee drinker, but that was one of the complaints I did hear. And yeah, they were kind of limited to what vendors they could have, so that's not an organizing fault. But it's just from, you know, if you wanted a soda, you had to walk out of the venue. Just about, there were a lot of things you had to leave the venue for. And I think that weather really contributed to just everybody's mood and everybody, you know, everybody being happy with how things wound up in the end.
And I don't know, maybe Kiko, you can chime in on this, but at WordCamps, you know, at WordCamp San Francisco, when I went there last year, I attended that one. You could, there was about, I think there was 900 or close to 1,000 people there, if not maybe a little over that. But in the hallways is where you have all the sponsors lined up, and then when a session was going on, the hallways kind of emptied out. You could tell when a session was going on, and based on what I've heard from some of the feedback from people that were there at this event, you couldn't tell whether the sessions were going on or not. Can you tell me what was going on?
Yeah, absolutely. I was in the hallway. I didn't even see one. The only session I saw was Matt's State of the Word. And
So you took part in the hallway track.
Yeah, definitely. And I definitely wanted to. There were a lot of friends that were speaking there that I would have loved to have gone and seen. But it just, like, I don't know. It just never felt like, oh, wow, it's time for a session to start. Like, normally I always felt like it was like a hockey game. Like, there's like a line change. You just see everybody kind of run in, run out. But it just wasn't like that. The hallways were packed the whole time. It was really pretty cool. And I think it's just that with 2,000 people, it's, you know, there's so many people you want to connect with, and it's hard to get any time to talk to anybody really, other than kind of like high-fiving them in the hallway or whatever. So to be able to like connect with people, you had to take that time because there were 2,000 people there. So everybody wanted to connect with a lot of people. So it really made it tough. So I think that people just kind of stuck in the hallways, which was nice. I thought it was great. And we can watch the sessions later.
And Nick, you, I know you were at the State of the Word last year at WordCamp San Francisco. What are your thoughts and feelings of being in a room with 2,000 people compared to what you felt at WordCamp San Francisco? Did you, at any time during this, during the weekend or during the event, did you feel overwhelmed as if there were too many people?
I actually didn't. Interestingly enough, I think that at San Francisco, there was definitely, at Mission Bay, there was definitely a feeling of more, a little bit cramped in that State of the Word place. I know there was a lot of people standing. I remember that for sure. This conference hall, State of the Word, or the kickoff, it felt like there was ample space, and I didn't feel overwhelmed at really any point because I felt like there was always space. I don't think there were any sessions that had standing room only. Yeah, it's pretty good in that sense.
And Michelle, did you feel overwhelmed at all between all the people and interacting and everything that was going on?
Sometimes. And for that, luckily, they had little quiet areas upstairs by where you get the food and where the State of the Word was, where you could just sit down and chill for a little while and then get back into things.
And Chris, I know you attended some of the sessions, and I was watching a lot of cool sessions here. You know, based on my experience from the live stream, the only complaint I have is that in the very beginning, there was just a ton of people accessing the live streams, and it was very hard to, A, load the WordCamp US website, and B, access the streams. But about an hour after the event started, everything was working smoothly. I could access all the streams just fine, and the stream quality was awesome. In fact, this time they had captions, so you could read the text as people were saying things, and there was a lot of, it was kind of funny seeing it sometimes put up incorrect, you know, typos or incorrect words, but overall it did a pretty good job with the live captioning.
It was fast, too. That's the thing I noticed. It was really fast.
I think that first hour I'd be willing to bet that they probably had to get bandwidth turned up. A lot of people saw that, you know, even sitting in the first two sessions I went, there was nothing. And then after about, oh, by lunchtime that first day, everything just kind of came alive. So I would almost be willing to bet that they probably, either people switched to MiFi or they increased their bandwidth, because it really would, I mean, that's how it should be too, right? I mean, plan on a certain amount and to have the ability to go big if needed. But, yeah, I mean, it went really well. And whether you're in the hallway, whether you're in one of the rooms, there really wasn't any problems there.
Yeah, I know a complaint early on during the conference was that Wi-Fi was down or Wi-Fi was really slow, and that was just everybody tapping into it first thing in the morning. So what they did, I guess they ordered some more hotspots or access points, and I think that alleviated some of the stress. By about that time, everybody just put the phones away and just started interacting, and you didn't need Wi-Fi at that point.
I don't know about that. It's a tech conference. There are phones and laptops out. Whether you're in the, it's amazing. It amazes me at a conference like that, at a crowded hallway with 2,000 people, how many people can type and walk at the same time
and not run into each other.
That's true. I think I was a little too addicted to my phone that time. Although it was like half the conference was on my phone, the other half was in person. So
it's like every time I saw Chris Christoff, he was coding on somebody's table. I mean, they were everywhere.
It was definitely hopping in that sense.
So, Nick, how many sessions were you able to attend, and do you have a favorite one?
I'm trying to remember. I think my favorite one, though, was Rachel Baker's How to Build a WordPress Theme with the REST API, right? And I think that it went really in-depth. I think that's the depth we needed, and everything was explained really well, right? She's one of the lead developers on it, so she was able to explain everything, answer all the questions really promptly. There was also a little bit of humor inside of it too, which sort of made it funny. I noticed that, you know, it was definitely a great, just an interactive and great presentation. So I think that's my favorite.
And speaking of the REST API, did you know, throughout this entire year, any WordCamp you go to that mentions the REST API, if somebody's doing a session on that, the room is packed, standing room only, or you can't even get into it because it's overflowed. Did you see the same thing during this session?
So it was, like I said earlier, there wasn't really any like situations where it was standing room only, but it was definitely a packed room anyways, and you could hear everyone furiously typing, and the caption person was like, that was probably one of the presentations where the mistakes mostly happened, because information was going fast. It was awesome in that sense, though. It was there are plenty of people and definitely very into the whole concept of building themes with the REST API. So,
and Marcus, going back to the live stream, did you experience the same issues I did? Did you start watching from the beginning, or did you just check in throughout the day?
I checked in throughout the day, at least the first day. I did have some difficulties, as you did, kind of that first, right when it kicked off, but it did clear itself out. But I was pretty amazed at the quality. It was first rate. I had it going full screen on one of my other monitors, so it was really nice to work alongside that and still catch some tracks.
I saw some people, some tweets, some images of people watching it on their big, large-screen TVs in the living room. I said, boy, that's a nice setup. And it actually looked pretty good because the stream quality was so high.
Yeah, there should be, and I saw one from overseas where they were all gathered and had a projector on a screen that they were watching.
Oh, one of the watch parties.
Yeah, exactly. So that was pretty nice. But, yeah, it was a good experience, even though I couldn't be there in person. But, like the rest of the panel here has mentioned, it's a great networking opportunity, and hearing all of this going on, I'm sort of kicking myself for not going in person.
Well, we'll talk about a second chance here later in the show, but Kiko, when I think of swag, I think of my gray Prestige Conference shirt, which is the first shirt I wear after every load of laundry I do.
I think you said it makes you excited to do laundry, I think was the exact quote.
Well, yes. Your shirt that I received at Prestige Conference excites me to do laundry, and I actually feel smarter when I wear it, I think.
Maybe that's
a side effect. But it's an awesome shirt. It's a high-quality swag item, and from what I understand, the swag was strong at WordCamp US. I mean, there were T-shirts, there were metal coins of WAPU, and there was, I mean, you name it, it was there probably at the venue. So I don't know if you had a chance to pick up some of the swag, but as someone who has some knowledge in this area, what's your take on all the various swag items you saw at the WordCamp US?
I think it ran the plethora. GoDaddy definitely brought it. They are the ones that bring it all the time, though. You can't use the C word in the military. You have to call it an RMO, round metal object. Otherwise, you're starting a challenge, and if you start a challenge, whoever can provide that then has to buy a drink. But they had them in like three different colors. They had a bronze, a silver, and a gold, and then they had an all black one. And if you pulled the all black one, you got a choice of like a Yeti microphone, or a GoPro, or a drone, or they had something else too, but they were all like several hundred dollar prizes, though. Pretty cool.
Man, I was thinking, man, I saw the quality of those Wapoo coins. And I was thinking, man, that's one of the swag items I wish I had an opportunity to. You had to be there in person to get, obviously. But I was thinking they were plastic, but no, you're telling me they were metal.
Yes. Yeah.
And you know, I can only imagine that probably, you know, plastic, okay, but I mean, a metal coin, that probably had to be a bit on the expensive side, I would imagine, for a swag item. And then all the coins.
You have to buy them in bulk, which it seems they did on most of them. But, I mean, they're a couple bucks each, though, and they were giving them out to everybody. So, pretty nice.
So, there, GoDaddy gets a little bit of praise there for the swag. Michelle, your favorite swag item?
I really like the coins.
You don't like your microphone?
That was, I guess I would be one. I won the, well, actually, Chris won the Yeti microphone, and since he already had one, it now got to come home with me. I also really appreciated, I forgot who had it, but one of them had tote bags. And that really came in handy to put all the t-shirts and stuff in, because I actually got to come home with a few shirts for my daughter as well.
No, when it comes to swag, I've run into some situations at times where I pack my duffel bag, only bring one bag, and then I have my book bag, which is my carry-on. So I pack up the duffel bag, and if I'm going to be there for 4 days, I'll pack 5 days worth of things. And then you go to the WordCamp, and next thing you know, I've got a couple extra shirts, a couple other things I got to take home, and I almost can't go home with the swag because it overloads me.
I don't take t-shirts anymore. I just wait for whatever I get. Now I'll be that guy where, you know, wear the shirt of the band you're seeing at the concert or whatever, however you want to refer to it. But yeah, I go for t-shirts and I wear them there. It looks a little tacky sometimes.
Yeah, I started limiting my t-shirt taking as well. It gets to be a lot. There are a lot of sponsors and there are a lot of people giving away t-shirts. So
I saw an image from somebody who, they must have had, there was 8 different t-shirts they left that conference with. I mean, it's a whole wardrobe.
I had 9, and actually this wasn't, I thought it was kind of low compared to I left South by Southwest 1 year with 38, so 9 didn't seem
38
that bad.
Dang. Jeez, man.
why did you even take 9 then? Jeez.
They were cool, I don't know.
They're free shirts. He
That's true. It's free t-shirts.
So the guy likes polyester and cotton. I gotta hand it to him.
I live. My wife makes fun of me that my entire wardrobe is WordPress shirts anyway. So I gotta keep up the tradition.
And the plaid button-down shirts that you wear during your talk.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, I did not wear a plaid button-down during this talk. So blah.
I think Chris's doppelganger was giving his talk.
Yeah.
So anybody want to actually open this up to anybody, but if you have a favorite session or favorite a favorite session, feel free to tell us now because I have one in mind that I'd want to share.
I would have to say the most touching one had to been Rich's talking about mental health and how we all as a community need to take care of one another.
Yep.
Yeah, you don't see most of these work camps have technical talks or tutorials or how to get involved with the community, and his sessioner was more about, hey, there are people writing this code, and there are people that are remote workers, and we just need to do a little more. You know, they're working really hard, and they're putting work before self, and we need to do a better job of taking care of ourselves and each other, so kind of reaching out to say, hey, you know, giving people pick-me-ups during the day to sort of keep their mood up instead of letting them dig themselves so deep into a rabbit hole. I think we need more talks like that at more work camps.
I don't think there was a dry eye walking out of that room.
Wow, really? It had that much of an impact, huh?
There was a lot of emotion going through the room.
For sure.
Wow, incredible. I know my favorite session throughout the day, that one that I really enjoyed was during a lightning session. His name is Charlie Reisinger, and he was talking about teaching the next generation of WordPress bloggers and hackers, where there's this school out in Pennsylvania called Penn Manor School District, and he was talking about this technology thing they have set up to where the kids are giving these laptops that are that are open, that they, I think they run Linux, and he lets the, it was all about empowering the kids to be able to hack on things and to learn how the technology works, and then use the website, which is running on WordPress, and apply that and write for their fellow students. And it was just an excellent presentation on trying to get the next generation, the youth, to learn how things work. And something that he said, which rings true, in fact, even, you know, to take it back to WordPress, is that everything, technology is all about, over time, simplification and GUIfying everything, or graphical user interface. And gone are the days, except for the developer types, where you have to learn commands and use a command line and actually get in, dig deep with functions and code. And I think that rings true. And his fear was that, you know, as we continue with the graphical user interfaces, that kids will not learn at a basic level on how things work, and it's going to hamper them instead of help them in the future. And during this whole conversation, I was thinking, man, I wonder what Nick thinks about this. Go ahead, Nick.
Well, first I'm going to say I probably have to watch this talk, because that is one I did not see, and I feel like I'm missing out here on something interesting. To the point of what he was saying, yeah, that is an interesting point, and I can definitely see that, because I, you know, one of the biggest pieces of advice that people give me, right, is learn a functional programming language, like these days as I rise as a programmer, so C, C++, something like that. And it's not, you know, it's a complex language, but you learn it so you understand, you can understand almost any other language, or at least a lot of other languages, through those programming concepts. So first, to that point, I do think that's a really interesting presentation and an interesting point about GUIfying things. But yeah, I'll have to look. And obviously, I'm a big supporter of like technology in schools and stuff. I think that's great. My school offers a lot of technology to us too. We had an hour of code today, which I wasn't able to attend, but super helpful and all that. So yeah, very interesting. Good to know that there was a talk like that there.
And Chris, you had something to say?
Isn't that the whole implementers versus developers argument anyway? I mean, I teach computer science, so I get it. We've been having this argument for 10 years. Oh, well, this new theme, Avada, Divi, go back 5 years to what the old original, you know, some of the older ones were. Oh, there's not going to be any programming. I don't know. I hear that so many times. And yeah, it keeps advancing, but somebody underneath is still writing the code for that.
Well, it's kind of like the argument that sometimes comes up with, oh my goodness, look at this theme builder. Designers are going to be put out of business, and it never happens. No theme builder is going to put a talented designer that knows a thing about colors and contrast and things of that nature out of business. Or can it? I don't know. Can it, Kiko?
I don't think that that's even what the guy's getting at. I think it's more that he's just saying that by making things simpler for people, it makes them not have to use their brain as much. I don't think it's so much that we're not going to have a need for programmers. It's that we're not going to be developing people to think like problem solvers. We're going to be allowing people to just, you know, like, oh, let me just flip the switch. Oh, the light goes on. They have no concept for what has to happen for that light to go on. And in not understanding, you know, current in things, we're not building future problem solvers, I think is more what he's getting at.
Well, I mean, hasn't Google sort of taken over problem solving? I mean, you just Google stuff, find the answer, implement it, and you don't care how it works just as long as it works.
Yeah, I mean, for simple things, yeah, like, you know, I mean, simple little solutions, but we're not encouraging people to be like Elon Musk when we make things simple for children. We're not encouraging people to figure out, you know, I mean, there's simple problem-solving things that kids can do that can help them to be better problem solvers and way more complex things as they get older. But by making things simple, it doesn't really encourage that. I think that's more what he means.
Well, on that same track, though, you're never going to mistake a master for somebody who doesn't understand their craft.
Sure.
Marcus, did you pick up a favorite session, or did you like them equally?
I'll tell you which ones I liked. Kim Shivler did a session on how to build online courses, and that's something that I'm deeply involved in a project now, and I picked up a couple of things in terms of just the build cycle to make things a little more efficient and streamlined. And then, obviously, that Nick mentioned, building a theme in the REST API from Rachel Baker. That was a great session. And yeah, it was difficult to follow on the stream just because so much stuff was flying around. I can't wait for the replay on that particular one. And then I watched as much REST content as I could in terms of the sessions, just trying to absorb it. And then our buddy David Bissett, I watched his session on next generation projects with BuddyPress. I thought that was a really cool session.
Yeah, he did a great job with that.
Yeah. So, and then Nason's stuff too, as far as development, that was a good session as well. So those were my favorites, at least for the first day. And then, you know, I watched Chris's session, and a couple of other ones in there as well. So they were, you know, I was really pleased with the content and the diversity, at least, of the topics that may not have been covered with such depth in other WordCamps or sessions that I've seen.
I have a question for you guys to watch the live stream. What was the ability? Were you able to just pick which room you wanted to be in at any time?
Yes. Yeah, so on the live stream page, for each track had its own link. You had one for opening remarks, and you had a track for Independence Room, a track or a link for this room, and a link for the Lightning Talks. And then Matt's keynote State of the Word had its own link. So, yeah, you could just switch between rooms, and if a speaker ended early, if you had the stream up in another tab, you just switch tabs, click play, boom, you're right there in the other room. It was a pretty nice setup.
That does sound pretty nice. That looks cool. Sometimes if you end up in a session and you're like 10 minutes into it and you think, oh, man, this is the session I should probably be in, you can just switch. That's pretty nice.
Yeah, so that's what I did here. I mean, because of the issues that were in the beginning, I thought, well, I better load up each stream or each link in a tab in case I can't access it anymore. But I was able to do that the whole day where I was able to mute one and go to the other, or it was easy to switch around. It was a pretty nice setup.
So you were hogging double the bandwidth of the stream, is what you're
saying? No, I paused them. I did not continue to play them. I paused.
That's why it was so slow the whole time. Jeffro was causing Wi-Fi issues.
Don't you even dare, son.
No, this makes a lot of sense now.
It does make a lot of sense. I'll agree.
But it was that was pretty cool. So let's talk about the grand poobah of them all. The reason why. Okay, I won't say the reason why, but one of the biggest reasons why. One of the coolest reasons to be there at WordCamp US is, of course, Matt's State of the Word, which is the sort of the annual tradition that he does. He gets up on stage, tells us everything cool that's going on in WordPress, and this year was pretty cool. It's, in fact, WordCamp US was such a big deal in Philadelphia that the city council and the mayor came out and declared December 5th WordPress Day. And there was a whole declaration, a document that was signed. I thought that was really awesome.
Yeah, that was a great way to kick it off, in my opinion. It definitely was just a cool thing. Like, it was Constantine Oberlin walked up and introduced Matt, and then he introduced this the councilman, I believe. And suddenly they get up with a certificate, right, that it's WordPress Day in Philadelphia. So it was definitely a really cool way to kick it off.
Matt Mullenberg, is that what he
Matt
said?
Matt Mullenberg, yeah.
I was just going to bring that up, but thank you, sir, for bringing that up. That was one of the highlights. I thought it was real funny. So, you know, I was thinking next time we have him on the show, we're going to introduce him as Matt Mullenberg. So it's an inside joke now in the WordPress community.
I thought you were going to call him Silver Fox.
Oh, because of his hair?
And by the way, point of fact, the City of Philadelphia's website, not on WordPress.
Oh.
That's so cool.
We're going to have to fix that.
Yeah, we're going to have to fix that for sure.
So one of the things that Matt Mullenweg sent out an email, and he says, I'm asking for feedback on what you guys would like to see or changes or ideas for the State of the Word. And one of the posts I wrote, Marcus, I think we talked about this last week, is I want to see a slide dedicated to the people we've lost and the WordPress community this year. I think it would mean a lot and would humanize the software because there are people behind this awesome software, 25% of the web use every day. And I was extremely happy that in the beginning of the State of the Word, he acknowledged those who passed away, and he actually did a moment of silence on stage. And it was It was just awesome. I mean, you guys were there, I think, inside the room. I imagine you could hear a pin drop.
Or a baby cry.
Yeah, there was one baby cry. That was it.
I wonder if that was Sarah's baby. Sarah's baby. We'll have to find that out. But I that just meant a lot to me. I think that was a huge gesture on Matt's part. And, you know, I was hoping for a slide or something else, but as always, he comes up with an idea that's better, and I just thought that was sort of a really awesome thing he did. And I don't know if he's going to do that every year if we lose more people, but just a cool thing he did. Just meant a lot to me.
And on that note, did anyone acknowledge the person that was receiving the Kim Parcells scholarship?
I didn't know that entire weekend.
Oh. Yeah.
But then again, I was not in State of the Word, so if it was mentioned, it was probably that.
It wasn't mentioned.
Yeah.
It was not mentioned. That's I didn't even think about that. It should have been. It would have been nice to have her up on stage or something. So
that's really work with the flow. I mean, it's like really kind of Matt's thing. It's like right. Steve Jobs getting up for the keynote and like taking care of administrative business. You know, sure. I just can't see it.
Right, yeah, I could see how that works. So one of the first big announcements in the State of the Word is, in fact, the story of WordPress, the history book that Siobhan McCune worked on, which is on GitHub, is actually going to be published. It's called Milestones, the Story of WordPress. In fact, it should be released this Friday, so there's going to be ebook form and .pub, and I'm not sure if there's going to be a physical copy of this or if they're going to print it on demand, but it would be nice to see somehow get like a physical copy of the WordPress book. So it's great to see all that work that Siobhan put into it actually come out to reality, and it's just one more project that's done. And, of course, it only goes up. The history book only goes up to about MP6, so there's going to have to be a second version or a revision to it, but that's okay because I'm going to be mentioning every book somehow, some way. But, yeah, cool project. And then, of course, there's the insane amount of stats in terms of the WordPress community, where he says there have been 89 WordCamps in the world this year with over 21,000 attendees from 34 countries, and then he says that there are over 40,000 people whom attended more than 2,000 events. So the WordPress community is rocking and rolling, and a lot of that, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I think this, when we talk about community and events, it all comes down to grassroots efforts, where it all starts with the meetup, the local meetup in your city, your town, wherever it is. I think that's where it starts before you evolve all the way up to these work camps. I don't know if anybody wants to comment on that. But
I agree.
Well, there you go. All right, somebody.
I'll second that, sure.
And, of course, he talked about the advancements or the benefits of adopting Slack. I'm glad he mentioned that, because I've been wondering what that's been like. And apparently there's been over 200 million messages sent in the last year with Slack. And so it's obviously made communication better. It's made it easier. Of course, everybody's productivity goes down when Slack, which is a service, goes offline. But for the most part, it seems to have done its job of bringing people together, and I see a lot of teams and channels, you know, people are collaborating now, and I think Slack is a big part of it, part of the reason why. Somebody write that down. He was so upset he had to say the F-bomb. I got to edit that out.
I didn't realize you were that upset
with that service. Jeez.
Tell me how you really feel.
No, I'm just kidding.
Slack drives me crazy.
Roast. Wow! Oh, you have to learn
how to filter all that out. I mean, there's not a lot of noise if you filter all that stuff out. Yeah, I mean, where are you going in Slack?
Well, every freaking conference, every you name it, everybody's got their own Slack team, and that's cool and all. But that's the only way all these things communicate. I was up to 26 different Slack teams at one point this year, and I shut them off, and then I start getting angry emails. Well, did you get the message? No, I didn't get the message. I can't pay attention to that many channels.
That's when it becomes crazy, yeah.
Okay,
but they're moving towards an enterprise, you know.
I pissed my dog off. Rent is definitely off.
So your dog is not.
Yeah, I hear the dog. Like
yeah.
Something else. So we also announced the upcoming WordPress release lead. So for 4.5, it's going to be Mike Schroeder. He does an awesome job with DreamHost, and then you have 4.6 Dominic Schilling, and then WordPress 4.7 Matt Mullenweg. Now,
Mullenberg.
Yeah, Matt Mullenberg.
I was going to say Matt Mullenberg.
So for some odd reason, Matt Mullenberg or Mullenweg likes to lead releases that include a default theme, and of course the overall theme of this year's State of the Word is to learn JavaScript, and not just learn it, but learn it deeply. I mean, that was his homework assignment.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling here that because this year 4.5 is going to include the second half of the REST API, that by the time 4.7 rolls around, I think Matt's going to turn the default theme 2017 into something that's JavaScript and REST API based. I think that's going to be his project, his little experiment for 4.7.
I don't even see how that could happen, to be honest. I don't know how a default theme could be configured with the REST API. It just seems a little...
I'm with Kiko on that. I think it's a neat concept, but it's when you're talking about something that's got to, especially only... Once 4.9, you know, within the next year for 4.7, to get everybody on board and have to do an entirely new thing, I find that really hard to swallow, especially for a software that, I mean, we still support 5.2 and PHP, to say, oh, we're going to throw out all the PHP in your theme and we're going to do a WordPress-based theme, that's really hard to swallow.
It'd be a big overhaul, and... I just can't see it.
But then again,
what do you mean by big overhaul? Because we're just talking about a theme here.
Exactly. And on the flip side of that, though, in Jeffro's, it wouldn't break backwards compatibility because you wouldn't be forced to use it. It's a completely new theme. Nobody's saying, you know, you're not breaking 2016 or 2015. So maybe on that side there's some validity to it, but it still seems like an awful big stretch to me.
So you're saying there's a chance.
I think he's indirectly saying no chance. So I mean that's one of the big takeaways this year. I mean, he hammered it and hammered it home, is that the future of WordPress and the web is JavaScript interfaces powered by PHP APIs, basically the REST API, which is PHP powered endpoints. So I think that's, I mean, Matt has sort of been on this trail since, I don't know, 2011. You know, it's been a few years since he's been talking about WordPress. The future of WordPress development is probably the majority of it's going to be JavaScript based and not so much PHP anymore. And Kiko, I mean, I don't think there's any big surprises here that he just really hammered home how important JavaScript is to the future of not only WordPress but the web.
I think he's been doing it for 2 years, though. I mean, it really isn't that surprising. I think that, you know, the Calypso and all that, that was all coming in, you know, that's automatic showcase of the REST API. So he definitely has been, he's been pushing this for a long time. And it still was surprising to me, even after Calypso, and it seemed like everybody knew about that, but it still was surprising to me how many people were surprised when he said, learn JavaScript. Like what are you not getting here? Like,
here's a question with
Calypso. Saying this for a while.
Do any of you guys know how close the API endpoints that Calypso connects to are to the REST API? Because that's a really interesting.
Well, there's two REST APIs here. WordPress Core is going to have its own REST API, but what Calypso is using is the WordPress.com REST API, which is behind a service. So yeah. I don't know what the differences are between the two, but obviously if you read into the hopes of the team that's behind Calypso and what Matt had said, it depends on what the community wants, but it's possible in the future that somehow the two could merge together, or the two could work hand in hand, either both APIs, or maybe it can merge into just the core API. I don't know. But I mean, that's something to be seen on how this all works out, because Calypso is just an experiment. I mean, he kind of put it out there. It's open source. You know, the WordPress.com app ties into it. And it's just, hey, look what we've done. Look what's possible. And a year from now, let's see what people do with this. And that's what I'm looking for, sort of somebody to tear apart what we see as Calypso or the WordPress.com app and come up with something completely new based on the same technology.
Fair enough.
And speaking to the JavaScript requirement in terms of homework assignment, let me ask just the panel in general of the programmers and developers that we have, what is the best resource to turn to start learning JavaScript?
Code Academy.
It depends on your, learning style. Like, are you do you work well with video? Do you work well written? You know, there's a lot of questions, I think. It's just like every question. The answer is always it depends.
Dang, but, Geeko had to like take Code Academy's spotlight away.
Code Academy's great. That's like Nick.
But yeah, it's not everyone's learning style. I agree with that.
You know.
Yeah, I'm with Geeko on that one. That's so dependent on your learning style. I mean, I don't learn it unless I actually start writing. So unless you give me a project in it, I'm never going to learn it.
Yeah, I've heard some people tutorials, and then I've heard videos, and I've heard Code Academy, and then I've heard some people say, just dive in, create a project, create the smallest project, create an RSS reader, create some notification thing, just create something, so at least that gives you the experience and the practical know-how of really kind of understanding what it is you're doing instead of, you know, the practical experience that maybe a tutorial just watching a video isn't going to give you because you're not doing anything.
I totally agree with that. Make a project, make something. That's the way everybody starts off, you know, their first HTML site, you know, back in the day. It was like, you just get something out there and you find the pain points. And you never, it's kind of goes back to what that guy was saying about kids, that if they don't learn the pain points, they don't learn how to overcome pain points too. So you kind of have to just start with vanilla JavaScript. I think the problem is also there's just so many options now with where are we going to go for frameworks, and there's going to be more and more frameworks that come along with the Reacts and the Angulars and all these, that people are going to be able to do this a different way, and we have to find as a community where are we going to go if we're all going to go together, or is it going to be a fragmented thing, which I think is probably more likely.
Well, yeah, but what do all those frameworks have in common? They're based on JavaScript, so at the core, people should be learning JavaScript right now, the ins and outs, how it works, not tie themselves to a specific library. I mean, if WordPress is taking advantage of a library, fine, you could look into that later, but understand the basics. That's why when you're hiring somebody, there's a big difference between someone who's a PHP developer and a WordPress developer. The two are not the same thing.
But it's the exact same. You're saying that in a WordPress community where nearly everybody knows WordPress-flavored PHP, I mean, hell, I'm even to the point, I have a master's in computer science, and I'm even to the point where if you were to give me Drupal or something, I'd struggle for a few weeks going, what the hell are the libraries here? That is the way this is going to be learned, and that's the way this is going to be done. If it fragments, that's going to be very hard to keep a developer community focused, because it will become so fragmented that everybody will be out doing their own thing.
Well, at least in the beginning, if you look at Calypso, they chose React. But is React the way Core is going to go? Is it going to be Angular? Is it going to be Node? I mean,
that takes it back to what Kiko said.
I don't think it's part of Core. I think what WordPress is going to be is different. I think your front end, and you can still do templating through WordPress, but it's always going to be done through PHP when you're doing it through WordPress. To do something different, it like requires a different hosting environment. It's like a different setup.
And I disagree there, though. Because it's going to be completely headless. WordPress is already going to completely headless.
And what do we mean by headless instead of...
Headless, I'm sorry. Your WordPress theme won't be PHP-based. There won't be a line of PHP in your theme. It'll all be some sort of...
I mean, the PHP is the endpoints, and endpoints is the REST API. Exactly. And what you're doing to interact with that and to create an interface to interact with that, that's where the JavaScript comes in.
Yeah,
absolutely. I agree with that. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that the templating system that WordPress implements is all PHP. I don't believe that we're talking about in a year from now that we're going to be able to have like a full JavaScript theming API all set up that is all going to be, you know, everybody's going to use the same system. I think it's going to be murky water for a while in between those two things.
Well, that goes back to what scares me. It's going to be all fragmented. And that's where it's going to fragment. Either we're going to have to decide on a standardized JavaScript framework, or we're going to have a mess.
So what you're saying is, you know, in 4.5, we get the other half of the REST API, then we have a full-blown implemented REST API in Core, but now you're going to have developers using whatever flavor of JavaScript they feel is best or fits the situation to tap into that REST API. So we're going to have all these different products and themes and interfaces that are just going to be a mishmash of all the different JavaScript libraries that are out there, but at least the REST API would be the one thing they have in common.
That's exactly it. And, you know, any commercial theme developer is going to want to go to something more abstract because it's going to be harder for the community to, you know, the community sells on Backbone. Just hypothetically, it's in Core. I can't stand Backbone, but it's in Core. and let's say handlebars.
Yeah.
Okay, so we standardize on that. Well, if you want a theme that's going to be unique and you don't want every WordPress developer under the sun tapping into it, you're going to have things on certain markets that are going to intentionally avoid that just so they can be different. It's harder for people to hack. For better or for worse, I mean, that's just the way it's going to go.
It's a good point.
May the best framework win.
Betamax, dude. Betamax.
It's so hard to say, like, who's going to be first? Who's going to be first to, like, solve this problem? And, you know, we are going to look to Core to do that.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I think they need to move, and I do need to move swift, so maybe Jeffro's right. It just seems like a really tall task.
Well, and you know, and I think Scott Taylor made a good point when he came up on stage and he was talking about WordPress 4.4, is that WordPress is at a point where if WordPress adopts modern technologies, the majority of the web should probably will adopt those technologies. So a lot of developers right now are looking towards Core to figure out where they should go, which direction should they go, and at least for now, we just know that we need to learn JavaScript and learn it as deeply as we can, and then the frameworks, I think, will come later. And that's the takeaway I got from that. Now, Michelle, instead of the homework assignment you received about learning JavaScript, what is your big takeaway, the thing you take away and you'll remember most from your first WordCamp US?
I would have to say it would be just the do more, learn more of everything in the direction we're going, of not only with JavaScript, but just keep in with the community and learning more, like with REST API, WP CLI, and keep going towards the future.
And I do like the fact that Matt was on stage and said, hey, you know, this direction we're going to learning JavaScript, if you're used to everything we've been doing here, you're probably going to feel like a beginner. It's going to be tough, but you're going to have to get over the hump and just learn it deeply, and then you'll come out better in the end in terms of the direction that WordPress is heading. And by the way, for our listeners out there, there's a distinct difference between Java and JavaScript. Do not learn Java. Stay as far away from Java as possible. Yeah. You'll be going the opposite
don't
direction.
Don't accidentally learn Java. I totally
yeah,
agree.
Yeah.
I mean, don't learn Java if you want to stay in WordPress.
It's fair enough.
If you want to go into software engineering, please be my guest. But
Java. Ooh, would you like to install this Java app? No.
I wanted to bring up that I found rather fascinating. You know, we had on one of our Friday night sessions, which typically consists of the exact crew that we've got here on this show.
Funny enough.
Jeff, you and I were both, the last time that we had Matt on the show, we were both pushed to ask a question regarding Five for the future in terms of automatic. And we didn't get to that particular question when Matt was on, but it was notable that Matt actually acknowledged that the Five for the future is not exactly up to the Five point in a lot of circumstances. And then, most poignantly, he acknowledged that automatic is lacking in terms of that 5% as well.
Yeah, so even everything their employees are doing, they're still not at 5%.
Yeah. Exactly. But
they're also scaling up, right? They're hiring.
Right. There's a lot of people.
So for every you know, full-time equivalent or every 10 full-time equivalents, you have to have so many of those hours going in.
Exactly.
There's no way they're keeping up with that.
It's tough.
You know, and I wanted to throw this out there. This idea is, and just to see what you guys think about this. But with the REST API and the JavaScript interfaces and things of that nature. Now, is it possible in some form or fashion that, you know, I used to see WordPress.com, which is sort of, it's a service, and then you got your self-hosted WordPress, which is a free open source project you host yourself. I used to see them as two separate entities, one's going one way and the other's going this way. But now, you know, if you take a look at Calypso and the Jetpack managed sites is kind of a merging other two, will we, at some point in the future, you think, will we ever get to a point where there's just one WordPress and we have all these APIs and everything that's handling everything, or will it always be WordPress.com and WordPress.org?
There will always be a separate entity.
Yeah, it's nice to have a WordPress.com, right, where it's super easy to set up, it's free, you don't have to worry about... I feel like for blogging purposes, And, you know, for hosting purposes, people are still interested in having that. Clearing up the confusion should definitely still be a priority for a long time. But
I guess you mean back end, though, right, Jeffro? Like that they're.
Oh, but does he mean the back end? Because then.
Yeah, possibly the back end where you look at it's sort of it's actually the exact point that I came up with. It wasn't my idea, but I read this in John O'Nolan's post about his thoughts on Calypso, where we could run into a situation where WordPress.com becomes the back end for all of WordPress.
That
would be rather interesting. I don't know how that would. I don't think a lot of people would like that because obviously, for it to be behind the service that you can't, you know, really have full control over and commit code to, I think that's on that line there. That's real iffy. But I mean, that's an interesting take on if that could happen or what if that happened.
I'll tell you why that won't ever happen, and it's because of the enterprise system. Companies will never buy into that in terms
but
of.
But that's also the same reason that WordPress.org and .org and .com are going to diverge even further over the coming years. .com has to go to that model. .org won't want to, and that's going to be a battle.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. So let's see. I'll start with you. We'll end up the little roundtable here. I'll start with you, Chris, work my way over to my right. But your biggest takeaway and your best memories you'll have of your first WordCamp US?
Like all WordCamps, it's the people.
The people. Just all people? One people? I mean.
Just in general. I mean, I felt like a pinball for 2 days. I don't think I had a conversation longer than 3 minutes with all but maybe five people the whole weekend. And in some ways, that was awesome because there were just so many awesome people there.
Awesome. Kiko, your next best takeaway? Or maybe I should skip Kiko.
Muted, sorry. No, I'm good. I'm good.
All right.
I'd say the best takeaway was definitely, I mean, it's always going to be the people because it was just, you know, it was a great event because we were so close. We were all able to hang out a lot. I didn't get to see as many people as I wanted to. A lot of friends, you know, close friends that like I see, you know, monthly. I just wasn't able to catch up with, but I was able to catch up with my Minneapolis crew, and I love those guys. It's great to hang out with them. We played a lot of pool. I thought the after-party spot was really nice for a lot of, like, community games and things, which was, you know, it bred a lot of great, you know, just hanging out.
How packed out was that after-party?
Huge.
It's pretty packed.
Yeah. Huh.
I mean, I heard, so you had pool tables, you had bowling. Ping pong. I think I saw some shuffleboard. I mean, didn't they rent out a floor or the two floors?
Two floors, yeah. And it was like they had like a life-size Jenga game. They had like a life-size Connect Four. You're like picking up the pieces for the Connect Four, and they're like a foot wide.
Oh, are you serious? Now that I could have some fun with, man. That sounds awesome. And Nick, your biggest takeaway from US.
The people and the conversations, for sure. The networking part of it was just huge. So learned so much just from three-minute conversations with people as well. So it was great.
Fantastic. So for everyone out there, if you listen to this and WordCamp US sounds like something you would love to go to and attend, guess what? It's going to be in the same exact spot about the same time next year. WordCamp Woo! US 2016 will be on December 2nd through the 4th in Philadelphia, PA at the same exact location. The Pennsylvania Convention Center. And guess what? Tickets, general admission tickets are already on sale. So they cost $40 each. They'll get you access to swag, provided lunch, and access to both days of the event. So what more? And, of course, access to the after party. What more could you want with that? So I've already, now, unfortunately, I wasn't able to go to the 2015 event. I've taken care of that because I've already purchased my general admission ticket for 2016. In fact, I'm going to get there early next year, just partake in some of the activities and maybe get in my 10,000 steps because I know I need 10,000 steps.
But, Michelle, what were your impressions of the event?
Well, my major takeaway was the people and the networking, but also just the feeling of community that can just take you through the next year of just more of knowing we are not the only ones. Whether it be the happy, the sad, the learning, or the doing.
Nice.
So, learning and doing and just taking care of each other, right? Take care of the people.
Yes.
We got to take care of each other. So awesome. So I'm glad you guys came out. I'm glad everybody had a safe trip to and from WordCamp US. Sounds like everybody had a great time. I'm disappointed I didn't get to go now they look back on it, but it will be rectified in 2016. And I hope I can see all you folks, fine-looking folks, at WordCamp US 2016. And Chris, before we let you go, give us some info on how people can get in touch with you, keep tabs on you.
You can find me on our website, www.chriswigman.com, or Twitter at Chris Wigman.
Thank you very much, sir. Kiko?
You can find me on Twitter, Kiko Doran, KIKODORAN, and you can find me at the Prestige Conference in May in Minneapolis, May 24th and 25th.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And Michelle?
You can find me at can'tspeakgeek.com, and then my Twitter is Michelle_Butcher.
And saving the best for last, Nick.
You can find me at TechVolts on Twitter, nick.techvolts.com, and techvolts.com.
Thank you very much, sir, and thank you all again for coming on the show, sharing your experiences, and hope you enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thanks for having us, Chip.
Yep, thanks for having us.
No problem. So, Marcus, there you have it, another roundtable in the books, and I think we covered the event rather well from multiple angles, different perspectives, and you know, Marcus, if everything goes well, hopefully you can find a way to get out to Philadelphia in 2016, and me and you could actually do like a live show there.
That would be, you know, we've been threatening that for a couple years now of doing a live show, but yes, that would be a perfect venue for it, and with that kind of crowd, boy, I bet we could get a little stage and get a bunch of people gathered around. That would be really fun.
I don't know about turning it into a session, man. I get nervous.
No, just out in the hallway. We'll just get up on a box.
Yeah, so as soon as people come out of the room, hey, sit down. We got to talk to you about this session. You know, that would be pretty cool. So with that, Marcus, why don't you give us your plug-in picks of the week?
My gosh, we've got some really good plug-in picks of the week for this week. The first one is called Pop-Up for Contact Form 7. Now, most people out there from a commercial perspective when it comes to a contact form will use Gravity Forms or something like that, but for a free solution, Contact Form 7 is out there. And then also, people use things like Opt-in Monster or some of those other paid plugins. This one is called Pop-Up for Contact Form 7 because it does exactly that. You can take a Contact Form 7 form, and then when it's submitted, it actually can also pop up with another confirmation. So it's pretty cool, and it is by Ayaz Korajia from India. The next one is called Reset WP. Now, this is a pretty intriguing plugin. It's something I wish I had a while back. It actually resets the entire WordPress database to the default installation. So this is the nuke button that everybody's been looking for. It deletes all the content and all the custom changes to the theme that you may have done and anything else. It resets only the database. It doesn't modify it or delete any database files or anything like that. And this is by Nikunj Soni, also from India. This is his second plugin that he submitted to the repository. And then finally, this is one that I am using right now on the rebuild of the WordPress radio site, which is WPR.fm. This one is called Jock On Air Now, and it's also known as Joan in terms of the acronym. It lets site admins easily manage and display the rotating programming schedule and also feature what is live right now. So if you were doing a radio station site, you could actually program in the time slots of the disc jockeys, and then it would just take the system time, and when it's time for the next person to come on, it then moves them up into the rotation and puts kind of their featured images being on air right now. So it really helps in terms of anybody that's running a stream or anything else like that. Again, it is called Jock On Air Now. It is by G&D Enterprises, as they're known in the repository. And this is their first plugin, and they are straight out of Brooklyn, New York. And these are my plugin picks of the week.
Fantastic. So that's going to do it for this episode of WordPress Weekly. Next week, next Wednesday, Marcus, we're going to be talking to our good buddy we've mentioned a few times on the show, Jeff Mattson.
That's right. I can't wait for the show. Jeff is a really funny guy, and I know that this is going to be a really entertaining show just because Jeff and I know him so well, and it's really strange that he wasn't actually in this show as well, because then that would be kind of our WordPress After Dark hangout that we have every Friday. But it is going to be an excellent show. He's the curator of the Heartbeat plugin and also does documentation for Rocket Genius as well.
Yeah, so we're gonna have a good time. So you can catch show notes for this episode and every other episode on WPTavern.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro. That's JeffFR0. And Marcus?
You can find me at my website, MarcusCouch.com, and on Twitter as MarcusCouch.
And until next Wednesday evening, everybody enjoy and have a safe rest of the week. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday evening at 9:30.